Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of the Pursuit Podcast. I'm your host, Jordan Engineer. And in today's episode, Ben and I are joined by Vance Outdoors Pro Staff member and Muskingum University archery head coach, Craig Holycross. We talked about how he started hunting and fishing, how he got his start in competitive archery, and explained the different types of classes. Lastly, we introduced Muskingum University archery and discussed how he and his team are laying the building blocks for the years to come. Please welcome Craig Holycross. All right, cool, everyone. We are officially live with Craig Holycross, pro staff member here at Vance Outdoors, as well as a whole host of other stuff. You got accolades. How you doing, buddy?
Good.
Thanks for being here. And of course, you know, the man behind the switches, Mr. Ben Johnson.
I'm here as well.
And for the YouTube listeners out there, we got some new decorations on the wall, which is pretty sweet. So if you've been following along on our social media channels, you'll see that we added some extra stuff to the studio here. We got a new table as well as some sweet
mounts. Scored some bass and crappie and a
nice little buck here.
Yeah.
He's actually a 13 point. I counted them.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Craig, man, thanks for coming in. I appreciate making a drive over here. I know you're a busy guy, so.
No, that's not a problem at all. I'm glad to finally get in here and sit down with you guys.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And so people may have seen, we did some work with Craig, obviously, with the Muskingum Archery video that we did. That was a really fun shoot, a little shoot-off against some of the students. And then a challenging shoot. It was dark, but.
Yeah, the lighting in there is not the best.
Not the best for spots.
Yeah. We'll have to do a rematch. We'll do one outside at the outdoor range one day or something.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, they got a sweet thing. So we'll dive into that some more. But before we get too far in the weeds, man, let's go ahead and introduce yourself and then kind of talk about who you are, what you do, and then kind of how you got your introduction into the sport, if you will.
Yeah. So, obviously, name's Craig Holycross. I'm from here in Central Ohio. Love hunting, love fishing. Really big into target archery. I'm a prime pro staffer, and I'm also the head archery coach at Muskingum University. So pretty tied into collegiate archery and just, you know, the overall growth of the sport.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I don't know. As far as how I think it all got started, it's kind of crazy because I'm like, I do what for a living again?
You know? No doubt, man.
Because it was like for the longest time, just like a lot of people, like archery or just like any other hobby, it's usually just a hobby or a passion that, you know, you find time for on weekends or in the, evenings or something like that. So to be able to actually like say like, no, I do that every day is pretty cool. I think it's unique because not a lot of people will get to say that.
Oh, definitely.
But how it happened was just one of those things, like, you know, when, you know, people say it's just like it was meant to be, or, like God really sent me something that day because it was a rare thing to happen by chance. But with just, you know, getting started with hunting in general, though, not coaching, obviously it was in the family. My dad and grandpa was just like, you grew up and it was hunting and fishing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that's what we do for our family trips and everything. So it's kind of in our blood. I would say, like, you know, it didn't, you know, get to a point where I was, like, you know, really passionate, like, extreme about it until a little later on in life probably. And, you know, it kind of took a backseat because I played other sports and stuff. Yeah. I played soccer in college. And but, you know, it really, you know, I'd say I got really into it in college, probably. One of my best friends got me back into hunting and fishing in college, and it kind of was just like, you know, he kind of sparked the fire for me. And it was like, you know, if I wasn't at practice, I wasn't at school, it was I'm in the woods or I'm on the water, and it kind of just took off from there. And that's kind of like where the the target side came into also. I was dating this girl, and her I guess brother-in-law at the time was a really well-known 3D shooter. He shot IBO and ASA and everything, and I had run into him a few times out west, out east, and you know, I knew nothing about setting bows up back then. I had a hunting bow. I think back then I was shooting like a some kind of bear bow or something, you know, and just entry level. And, you know, but after meeting Aaron, it like he kind of opened my eyes to like, oh my gosh, there's so much to archery. I had no idea. You know, he taught me how to fletch arrows and, you know, started playing with different sights and equipment. Like, I mean, everything. It was just like the book opened up and I was just like, oh my gosh, there's so much more. And I didn't even know 3D archery was a thing. Like, I didn't know that there were tournaments or anything like that.
Yeah.
You know, at local clubs and stuff, you could go and you could shoot targets and bales and stuff like that. But I didn't know how big of a deal it was. And so one weekend, I think my junior or senior year, Aaron was going to one of the IBO Triple Crowns and it was in Bedford, Indiana. And he was, you know, him and his wife, was, they were like, you know, you and Craig, you want to come with us, you know, he'll have a good time, bring his bow. He can shoot, he's shooting hunter class. And, you know, and I'm like, oh, you know, sweet. Get to go away with them for the weekend, stay in a hotel, shoot my bow. I'm like, yeah, that sounds like fun. You know, so we piled in his truck, we drove to Indiana. And when we pulled in and I saw all the cars, all the vendor tents,
it's wild.
All these people with these, like, I mean, you know, serious, like, target rigs. And I was just like, what did I get myself into?
A little bit,
like,
different than the bear bow.
I'm like, this is not like a backyard 3D shoot. This is a big deal.
Yep.
And so, you know, and I didn't even shoot a single 3D course, like a full course in my life until that day. And so we go down there and we start shooting, you know, shooting steak and everything. And I was just like all over the place. I don't believe I missed a target that day, but there's a lot of fives going on. And you know, at one point I was so nervous, and it happens to everybody at some point. I drew my bow back, didn't even have an arrow in it. And Aaron's like, you might want to get an arrow. And I was like, okay, yeah, I might need that. And I stepped back and Aaron was just like, it's okay, just breathe. Like, just have fun, just shoot your bow, you know, you don't have to worry about it. And, and after I left that first IBO, that, leg of the Triple Crown, it was like, I was hooked. I was like, okay, this is awesome. I want to go to more. Like, what do I have to do? I want to just immerse my, I want to get into this.
Yep.
And, it kind of lit the fire for target archery. And then, you know, it just became, a major passion in my life.
Now, that was in college, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you graduated, what, in 10?
Nine.
I would say, because you and my wife went to school together at the same time, which we'll get into kind of how that's kind of cool, especially considering where you're coaching. But in that area of the state definitely lends itself to being more outdoorsy for sure in terms of, like, colleges.
Yeah.
I think it's definitely probably one of the more rural ones, if you will, in the state. So.
Yeah, it's like what's good about it, though. You know, it's a beautiful campus.
And, yeah.
And, you know, we'll get into it here in a bit, but there's just a lot of good takeaways and good experiences that I had personally from there. And,
oh, sure.
Yeah, I think it's kind of like a, like, I guess you could say, like a hidden gem, you know, as far as university for academics and athletics now. So it's a cool place for sure.
So that was probably getting into that first IBO Triple Crown, which, I mean, you kind of walked into, like, the mother jewel of IBO shoots, Triple Crown, I think.
Yeah.
When Levi just ended up winning one, what did he get? Like, he brought home, like, $25,000 or something crazy like that. I see it. Every week he's posting a picture of his check. But so after that, kind of what led you, like, what was your next target bow? Or how did that process work with, like, transitioning from the hunting side?
Yeah, even then for a few years, I was really just like, you know, we getting more involved with, like, the local level shoots and stuff, and getting involved with the local clubs and things like that, and really just using it, like, as preparation for hunting season.
That's great for that. That's
what we were doing. And, you know, and staying in that hunter class, which, you know, it's a great class to start out in when you're getting into, I think, target archery. But, you know, even if, you know, your goal isn't to, you know, continue to progress throughout the target archery, you know, and just build on your skills for hunting, it's like a great all-around class. So I did that for quite a while. And, you know, I got pretty good at it fairly quickly, which was, you know, obviously because I was just shooting all the time, you know, you put work in and, you know, I wanted to continue pushing myself and going class to class, And that, you know, I think, you know, obviously you get out of college, start making a little bit more money, you have a job, so you're able to start traveling to these shoots and stuff, because nobody in my family was, you know, going to these shoots. And they weren't target archers, you know, they just wanted to hunt, which is awesome. But you know, so it was like just get, it was great because we, it gave me an opportunity to get together with friends and travel to these events and meet so many great people. And I mean, you guys know, but like the archery community is just like, it's awesome.
It's fantastic.
The type of people that you meet and run into and the stories and the, just the connections and the networking, it's, you know, it's really special. So, you know, it, by the, you know, down the road as we kept going, it's just like, well, I know what I'm doing come February to August. It's like at least once or twice a month, I'm going to be out of state shooting these things. So it's been fun.
Now, have you primarily focused on like outdoor? Are you doing, I mean, I know you do some indoor stuff too, but what's your favorite? Going more spots or just shooting the 3Ds?
Oh gosh.
No, I don't. It takes a special person to like spots, man. It's such a nerve.
My thing is like, I love 3D archery, and I wish, like, indoor archery is tough. I think it's a very mental game.
Oh, for sure.
But the, you know, looking back, and I tell, like, my student archers and our student athletes and stuff, like, whoever I talk to, it's like, I wish I would have been more involved with indoor archery earlier in my career at an earlier age, because I think it is, like, it's really important, you know, for the overall growth and your development as an archer on so many levels. For, you know, there's a lot of takeaways that you can take, or you can transition from indoor to outdoor. I mean, if it was up to me, like, I didn't want to shoot indoor archery because, I wasn't mentally strong enough for the game. I think that's what it is. And I'm trying to get better at it now. I say in the last 2 years, I started to, I mean, obviously going to some of these bigger indoor national shoots, and it's like, that is definitely my area that needs the most improvement. And a lot of the, like I said, a lot of it isn't really the shooting side of it. It's the mental side of that game.
Well, there's so much, the variables are taken out of that. You know, if you're missing and you're hitting nines, I mean, in some tournaments, if you hit a nine, you're done. You might as well just, you might as well just not even shoot the rest of the tournament. And so it's like, your form's got to be on point. Whereas I feel like on the 3D, and maybe you can attest to this a little bit too, but there's some variables to that. I mean, it's the wind, it's the sun, it's, you know, if it's hot, you know, even down to the part of like elevation, you know, you know, between shooting, not necessarily just elevation, shooting down on target, but even if you're like, say you're going to a Western IBO shoot, well, your arrow is going to fly different elevations and all sorts of crazy stuff. So
with indoor archery too, it's just depending on what class you're in, what event you're shooting. I mean, like you said, you can't mess up. You know, the best in the world are out there shooting and they don't miss, you know what I mean? So, but like with outdoor, you know, and depending, I mean, it's, you could sit here and argue, you know, because the classes, whether it's known or unknown, you know, are you judging or, it's, you know, that I've pretty much always shot unknown. And for me, it was because I was able to get better at judging. And for me, as long as I was judging good, it would make up for any imperfection I had in my shot usually. You know, whereas when you're shooting known yardage and it's basically like you're shooting spots inside, you know, you have to be aggressive if you want to win. You got to go after those 12s almost every target. You know, people have different strategies and different game plans, you know, as far as like course management and with the targets and what they're going to go after and what they don't. But at some point when you get to like that semi-pro or the pro level, I mean, there's some course management, I think, in everybody's game. But bottom line is you have to go for every 12. And, you know, that, I mean, that's where you find out. That's where you get found out right there, you know. Whereas when you're judging yardage, you kind of have some wiggle room and some stuff, you know. But even you know, the pro class now, like you got Levi and Dan, McCarthy and Jack and those guys, dude, they're human rangefinders.
They really are.
And you can't say that their shot isn't like good, like they're the best of both. And so, you know, it's kind of, you have to add that aspect of like, well, even in that class, you need to go for every 12, you, or, you know, on maybe not all of them, but like you better be hitting like well over 50% of them.
Oh, for sure. For sure. And then the other things too is really crazy, because I watched some of the, I think it was some of the IBO stuff that they televised live or whatever on YouTube. Dude, I watched Levi, man. He had this one. It was like last target. He had a 14 it to win. Dude, and it was like 37 yards. I mean, just, you know, a random number, dude. And it was just like, oh my gosh, darn. Like the pressure in that situation to freaking hit that is nuts. I'm glad you brought up unknown and known. So some of our listeners may understand that. They may have shot in a tournament before, like us. You know, we understand that. But kind of, can you break down on like a beginner level, kind of the different classes, if you will? I mean, I know there's a ton.
Yeah, but there's so many classes now. Like, there's probably classes I don't even know about, honestly.
But kind of break down the known, unknown, maybe some of the distances that you're looking at. You know, if there's any cap to those distances or kind of where the target range. It's not like a tack event, everyone. You're not shooting 90 yards at these things. So kind of like break down kind of how that all works out for people.
Yeah. So, you know, IBO, which a lot of people shoot.
It's an international bow hunter.
Yeah, international bow hunter organization. That's all unknown yardage. So you're judging in every class. The hunter class is, I believe, max 35.
Yeah.
They have like advanced hunter class that'll go out to 40. And then your men's bow open, which would be like an open setup, longer bars, and you can use lenses and stuff, single pin. That's 45. And then when you get to like semi-pro and pro class, those are 50 yard unknown. So max 50. And like you said, there's a ton of other classes that use a lot of classes use the same stakes and stuff. But so IBO is all unknown. And the terrain is usually at locations where it's pretty hilly, kind of diverse setting. So it makes it a little more challenging.
Yeah.
It takes away, you know, a lot of the targets, they take away the ground from you, and they'll stick, you know, an alligator out there at like 47 yards or something down.
Yeah.
Like, so, you know, they do a good job of making it challenging.
Yeah.
Whereas ASA is primarily, you know, pretty flat, you know, which I don't mind because you don't have to deal with a whole lot of like offset footing and a lot of, you know, your verticals and your horizontal stuff. It's, I think, a little bit easier to manage. But same thing, the ASA though, they really lean more towards, like, I would say it's primarily almost every class is known yardage.
Yeah.
Except for obviously, you know, semi-pro and unknown pro.
What format do you think you see the most of around here? Is it the ASA style, or is it, I mean, cause I feel like I don't notice as many IBO tournaments.
Yeah. And I mean, and I guess this is my own personal observation. I don't know what other people would, I think a lot of people would agree with it. But like, I think IBO used to be, you know, really big in the north, you know, ASA was primarily like in the south, you know, and to the west, and you have like NFA and field and stuff was out west, which pretty much still is. But like all the local clubs and stuff, I mean, yeah, they pretty much all scored the 11 ring and they all shot IBO for a long time.
Yeah.
And I feel like in the last 10 years, see a lot more clubs being affiliated with the ASA, with Mackenzie Targets. And, you know, I think it's just the, like how the sport is evolving. It's, you know, people want to shoot known yardage. Everyone has a rangefinder, you know. The other thing is, you know, if you're not shooting all the time and you're not judging all the time and you're not seeing targets like multiple times a week, it makes it really hard to be competitive at a certain level. You know, but don't get me wrong, like a lot of people still love going out and judging targets, even though you don't shoot all the time. It's a challenge and you have fun with it, you know. And it's also good practice because sometimes you might not have a rangefinder, your battery might die. You know, like, so, but I think like the overall direction, it's really been going towards like known yardage. I mean, you can look at it, you know, when you look at participation and turnouts, at events, whether it's IBO or ASA or whatever it may be, and you look at the class sizes and, everything, it's there. Like, you know, you get known pro and, you know, K50 and 45 and 40, you know, K40, like those classes are huge. You know, and you've got the IBO doesn't even come close to it right now.
And
it's just how it is.
And we saw some of that too on the ASA state qualifier that you guys hosted too. It was a lot.
And I think a lot to the other thing is just the involvement. Like people enjoy ASA. They like the game, you know. But like club, like the local clubs are getting involved with it. So like with the ASA, the Ohio ASA Federation, you know, there's, I mean, a crazy amount of qualifiers through the summer now. You can almost shoot an ASA tournament every weekend.
Yeah, you really can.
And, you know, and they're getting involved where, you know, there's, you know, they have awards and we're getting vendors involved and, you know, making it feel like more of like a bigger shoot than, you know, what it is. But, you know, you get the numbers to those shoots. And a lot of the clubs, you know, that are still, I don't want to say hanging on to, like, not to knock on Reinhardt targets, they're great targets, but like people don't want to shoot 11s, you know, like they like shooting the 12 and they like knowing the distance. And you don't see like as much of, there's not much of a presence. I don't believe of IBO in Ohio right now. And it's like, you know, I've gone to a couple of IBO state championships in the last few years, you know, I've done pretty well at them. But it's just like the participation numbers, they're not there at the events right now for a state championship for the IBO. And even being in Ohio, you know, like this is, should be like IBO country.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, we should, there should be like more of a presence, I think. And, you know, only seeing like less than 30 people showing up to a state championship. That's rough.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't know the numbers for the Ohio State Championship, but I'm just saying, like, it's nothing like what
they You'd think it'd be doing. Hundreds.
Yeah, you would think, you would pull people from all over.
Yeah.
Do you think it has something to do with, like, the ASA and being primarily known? I feel like it's the barrier, like, you know, I'm looking at, like Ben and I, you know, I've expressed this to you, too, but it's something that I've been keeping a watchful eye on. Heck, I even got that V3X33 just so I could have, like a hybrid bow, if you will. You know, it's big enough to be a target bow, but it's also considered still a hunting class bow. Mm-hmm. So you think having the 40 known or the K50 like being like an easier barrier to entry because people know that they don't have to guess. They may not have to lose as many arrows or have a bad performance. People want to show up and shoot good.
Yeah.
They don't want to shoot bad.
My opinion on it is, you know, there's a lot of times where I thought about, like, you know, I would maybe just shoot, you know, known yardage because, you know, it's if, like I said, if you're not seeing targets all the time, you don't own your own range.
Yeah.
It can be really hard to be competitive. So like if all you have to do is work on your shot, your mental game and, you know, stuff like that, I mean, that's a little bit more manageable.
Yeah.
You know, anybody, you can shoot just about anywhere and work on your shot. Yeah, it still helps to have those targets, right, in practice. But I think it's that's kind of the mindset of some people. It's like, when I go hunting, I have a rangefinder, I'm doing this for fun, you know. I don't want to lose my arrows.
Oh, yeah, that's not like
– I'm not coming out here to have a miserable time.
Yeah.
You know, people just want – you know. And so I think that might have a little bit to do with it.
And those super drives aren't cheap, man.
Yeah, you work hard for that stuff, and you don't want to lose it. Don't want to fling one into a tree.
Yeah. At 39 instead of 49.
Yeah.
I mean, I think everyone it comes down to people's personal preference and what they want to do, whether they like IBO, whether they like, you know, I do IBO and ASA, and bounce back and forth from both games. And, but I just, you know, and I'm a huge supporter of both organizations and USA Archery and FAA, you know, I love it all. Archery is awesome, right?
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I think my own opinion is ASA is kind of taking over.
Oh, for sure. For sure. Well, let's kind of get into you got some belt buckles.
Mm-hmm.
So let's kind of get into some of the. Go ahead and brag about yourself for a little bit and kind of talk about how I know you won one of the states, right?
Yeah, Ohio State Championship.
Ohio State. And then kind of how that transitioned into your pro staff deal with Prime. I know that was more recently, last year, I think.
Too, yeah, right? I think this is like a year now that I've been on with Prime, which is awesome because, I mean, if you know, you guys know, everyone at Prime and at G5, it's a great company.
Yeah.
It's just one big family. And they're extremely supportive of, you know, whatever it is that their staff is doing, which is great. I know that, you know, as far as, you know, the equipment, you know, you can talk about the bows and everything, how great they are, but it also means something to know that the not just the equipment you're shooting, but the company you're working for, you know, they stand behind you and you stand behind them, you know. So I feel like I've developed a good relationship with them, and it's opened the doors for a lot of cool things, not just with myself, but with, you know, the university and some other things. So hunting, and, you know, I'm really looking forward to shooting that new inline this year.
Yeah, it's for deer season. That's a great bow.
Binary cam system. So
it's a great bow.
Because I mean, I'm still shooting with for target. I'm shooting the Black 9 still for indoor and outdoor. Yeah, which is, you know, that bow just suits me though, because it's a 39-inch bow, so a lot longer riser. But the adjustability on the roto cams on that, and for me, I'm big on like the grip and the hold and the feel of a bow. And I knew like the one thing that pulled me towards them was just, you know, even when they had the CT series out, the CT9s and fives and all that, even Synergy stuff, I was like, man, I really like how this bow feels. And I couldn't wait to get one. And it was like, I did. And now I have a ton of them, but, that Black 9, it's like, you know, and they're all good. I mean, the Nexus, so many of my friends are hunting with that bow. And,
a lot of people still hunting with that bow for sure.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But yeah, this new cam system is pretty cool. I'm looking forward to getting it in the woods. I got some really cool hunts planned for this year. You know, going to go out of state, you know, not too far, just doing like Indiana, Kentucky, Ohio, and kind of see how we do. In the past, I've done fairly well in those states. So. Yeah. Well, not Kentucky. I'm trying to – I want to be able to say I've done well in Kentucky.
Yeah, but, no doubt.
But so looking forward to those trips. But,
You guys should hook up with Taylor. I think Taylor is our pro staff member, Taylor. He's working on going back down to Kentucky this year too. I think they were just telling me about that the other day. Now, we just had the Huffbuck on. His episode aired yesterday. Indiana is now like a trophy whitetail state. Mm-hmm. That's what happens when you shoot a 211-inch – deer out there.
I had some friends in college, my buddy, and he's from Indiana. And about, I think, 5 years ago or something, we linked back up, and I started going to Indiana to bow hunt with him.
Yeah.
And he's a real good hunter. He's a good guy. And I think I've shot 4 bucks out of 5 years on his property behind his house.
That's awesome.
And some of them are real nice deer. And so, I always look forward to those trips because, you know, we all, you know, it is like deer camp. His brother comes down and stuff. They work for Fish and Wildlife Services or Forestry Services or whatever. And we all spend it's like we camp out in the shop, you know, for a week. We have maps, talk about where we're going, and look at cam cards every night. And
that's the best.
It's a real good time. And I look forward to that hunt a lot. I didn't get to go last year, just life got crazy. And but usually, you know, that's really what I nowadays when hunting and stuff, it's like I love deer hunting.
Sure.
And you know, I've been really blessed in the past where I've harvested some really great deer. But it's like now I think I'm at that point where I think a lot of people can say the same. As it's like I'm more into the experience of it now and sharing the experience with people and friends. And it's not so much like what's this deer gonna score, or things like that. It's kind of like, you know, even if we don't harvest an animal this week, you know, it's like getting to hang out with friends and kind of, you know, put the rest of life craziness behind us for a while and just like connect and engage with each other. And you know, getting, you know, we're at the point where everyone's got, you know, kids, or they're having kids now, and some of them are getting to the point where they can share those experiences with us, and you know, taking them out to get their first deer, and you know, that's really rewarding. And so, you know, it was kind of a bummer not going out to Indiana last year, because it's just like I like getting out there and just kind of hanging out with the guys, you know, and being in woods I've never been in before. You know, like, so hopefully we get back out there again this year. I know it's going to be hunting season before we know it.
It's coming down the pipe, man.
I keep looking at my hunting bows and I'm like, I got to get one of these set up. I got to start doing something, you know, cause I'm like, This summer's gone by so quick. I'm getting married in like 2 weeks, and then I come back and we'll be back in school like a week and a half later, and we got to move. She's coming from New York. From New York, like, my schedule, I'm like, I don't even know how I'm going to get stuff done in between now. And
I'm just kind of wing it.
Being an adult sucks.
It really does. If you can't press pause on that time clock.
It's terrible.
I'm glad you said that, though, because you're right, 100% right. I mean, Ben and I feel the same way, for sure. I know I could speak for him, but, like, there's so much more to just enjoying the experience than there is killing something. Mm-hmm. I mean, we've said it 1,000 times on this podcast, but the hunt that Ben and I shared, and we didn't get to share many, but that one that we did, dude, we had a hell of a time. I didn't kill anything.
Yeah.
But we have, there's tons of stories to be told from it. There's experiences that we shared. There's learning opportunities there. You know, and then I'll be 35 this year, and, you know, my daughter's at the point now, she'll be 6. Mm-hmm. You know, before too long, she's going to be right there with, I mean, she could be in there right now with me. And so it's like, dude, I don't even care if I shoot like 100-pound doe. Like, I'm at the point now where it's just like, I want to share those experiences with her. You know, it's not something I've ever had.
Yeah.
So
I think it's important, especially nowadays, because once again, this is me thinking out loud, you know, my own opinion here, but like in today's, you know, with the outdoors and families and stuff, and you know, the experience is like social media, and you know, there is so much of a presence in everyone's everyday life, and there's a lot of information, and you know, every time you get on your phone, you're just seeing pictures of giant deer all the time.
Yeah.
Giant elk, you know, and you're only seeing, you know, the highlight reels, the highlight, and stuff, you basically.
100%.
But I think like because it's happened to me, it's like it affects me a little bit. It used to, and probably the youth, where it's like it's kind of setting these expectations of what their hunt should be like, or almost like desensitizing them in a sense where it's like, well, if I don't shoot something over 150, like, I don't even want to talk about it.
Yeah.
Oh, 100%. You know? Yeah,
or,
dude, yeah.
Or like, Dad, I don't want to shoot that deer. That's too small. And it's like, dude, when I was your age, I don't care.
Yeah.
Like, and now I'm at the point where I'm like, you know, it's kind of like, it's more about the experience, not like what you're going to post on your, you know, your feed that night. You know what I mean? Like, getting them to be proud of, you know, it's an accomplishment no matter what. The trophy's always in the eye of the beholder. Because for me now, you know, I look at the deer on my wall or the fish and stuff, and I'm like, you know, I don't think like, oh yeah, that's a 172, you know. No, I think of like
the experience,
what I did that day, the cameras, the hard work that went into it, who was with me, you know, what we did afterwards, celebrating and cooking out, you know, like that's the truth. Like that's what's where the rewarding side, I think, comes into. And I think we need more of that with our youth these days.
Yeah. And that's just
sharing those experiences.
Yeah. And that's just about every aspect of your life too. I mean, we look at it from the hunting and fishing side, 'cause that's what we're connected to. I mean, I feel the pressure. I know everyone in this room probably does. And it's like, it's unnecessary pressure. You know, you're pretty good at it. Your mindset's pretty good. And Ben, that is, it's just like, I'm going to shoot what gets me excited. I don't care if it's a 110 inch deer or a 210 inch deer. Like, it's going to, whatever gets me excited and gets my heart pumping. Like,
I love it. I mean, if an 8-pointer walks by me, I'm shooting it.
Yep.
Yeah.
You know, and because I think you don't realize like, it's not easy bow hunting.
No.
You know what I mean?
And not everyone gets to do it.
And how fortunate you are. You don't, you know, so it's like, it's a privilege, first of all. You know what I mean? And to say that, you know, I mean, you just used a stick and string, you know, to bring in some meat for the family.
A lot of work goes into that point. Yeah. You know?
It's a huge accomplishment. So, you know, I think.
I mean, especially looking at
it. It's watered down sometimes and people forget.
You said it best. It's all about the memories.
Yeah.
No matter what size.
Yeah.
You can look up if you get it mounted or whatever.
Yeah.
Hey, I remember that was, you know, 2020.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was with Jordan.
Yeah.
And I was with whatever.
Yeah.
You know? But don't get me wrong.
It's cool to shoot.
I would love to shoot a couple 200s.
Of course. Yeah.
And,
of course.
You know, and, but like you said, you know, I also don't have huge farms and I don't, you know, I'm not into the management side of things, you know. But I respect that side of it also. It just, you know, it comes down to the individual and what it is to them.
And I think a couple episodes ago, we had John Eberhardt. And, I mean, he's got over 50 deer in the Pope and Young record book. And so, I mean, no one's more accredited in terms of like, I mean, maybe there's someone out there, but not to my knowledge, in terms of like trophy animals. And, you know, he had the same kind of mindset too. It's just like these deer that you see, and we were kind of talking about something different, but these deer that you see on TV, you know, let's look at, I mean, they have a great show, but like Tiff and Lee or, you know, Headhunters or whatever these outdoor sportsman channel out, you know, whatever these TV shows are, these deer look like super manicured, right? Yeah. And it's just not, in a lot of regards,
Life.
Yeah, they're making
to manage deer, and they do a phenomenal job. Obviously, they love what they do and they're good at it, but that's not realistic for the guy who's working a 9-to-5 Monday through Friday.
It's not at all. I mean, I barely get time to even go check my camera.
It'd be cool to have more hunting shows that, you know, like, I think Hunting Public's pretty cool.
Hunting Public's fantastic about it.
It's like,
Meat Eater's doing a really good job with it.
You need some of those shows for the everyday guy that are going through some of the same hardships, I think, you know, where it's like, you know, the film is like, oh, I'm getting ready to go to the tree stand. You get a call from your wife. No, I got to go pick my kids up from school. Now I'm an hour and a half late to the stand. It's hot. The wind's bad. I have no choice. I have to sit here. Like, you know, it's like, because that's real life, you know, or dealing with other hunters and, you know, whatever it may be, you know, it can't all be sitting over giant food plots.
Yeah, you know what I mean? You know, nothing smaller than 150.
It'd be nice, but that's not mine. I don't have that privilege.
maybe heaven will look like that for us. No, you're right, though, because, I mean, I couldn't tell you how many times I love my wife to death, but, you know, I can't hunt at home because she knows I'm a 10-minute walk away from the house, and so it's like, hey, are you done yet? Like, the kids are being assholes. Are you done yet? Like, can you do something? Like, are you back? Like, are you done? It's dark. Why are you still awake? Like, it's dark. So.
Yeah. No, like, you know, going back to some of these hunts I've had, it's like, you know, I would shoot a really nice deer here in Ohio on Friday or something, and I would pack up, leave, you know, straight for Indiana, and I would be there like one day. First, this happened like, I think two out of the years that I've been going out there to my buddy Andrew's place is, you know, first night we got there, Andrew shot a giant like 172 or something that night. So like, as soon as I pulled into his house, we like went out and tracked his deer, and everybody from around the area came over, and we had a few adult soda pops and stuff that night.
Oh, of course.
And, you know, so we didn't go to sleep or, you know, and I was going to get up and hunt in the morning. And it was, woke up, and it was raining hard as could be. That next morning, I was like, I'm sleeping. So I slept until like, 11 noon, and rain cut out. So I got up, and there's just a little pin on this map. And he's like, there's a tree stand here now, you know. He's like, you should, you know, go out there and, you know. I'm like, okay. So, you know, not feeling so great that day. And it's noon, and it's like rainy, but it was quiet. So I go out there, and I walk, I get, you know, I don't know how, and the tree stand was like in the middle of this like hardwoods patch, and of course, and it's a latch on, and I found it, and I get up there probably at like 12, and I'm sitting there, and I like fall asleep, and I wake up, and I look over, and here comes this beautiful 10 pointer right by me. I draw back, I smack him at like 16 yards. He goes maybe 40 and rolls. And I call Andrew on the phone. I'm like, hey, I was like, dude, I just shot a real good buck. He's like, you've been in the stand for like an hour. And I'm like, I know, it's awesome, you know? And he kind of didn't believe me. And I was like, dude, I don't know.
Yeah.
And so, you know, they come out and we do it, you know? And it's one of those things like, dude, a lot of people have been hunting all year. You just rolled into Indiana, 20, like, sat in the stand for an hour, and you're like ready to go home already. It's like, well, might as well hit Kentucky now, you know? And, and then, like, I think that, you know, it was, like, one of those years you did good. Within 1 week, I had, like, two beautiful 10-pointers on the ground. And then the next year, it was, like, the same thing. It was, like, I just pulled up at his house. First sit, I go out to this one little pitch point I know of. And it was the windiest day you could ever imagine. Like, I mean, it was crazy. And I didn't even get in the stand probably until, like, 5 o'clock or something crazy. And lo and behold, and walks this beautiful 9-pointer at 20 yards, pinwheel it. It goes like 30. Same thing. I call him. I go, dude, I just shot him. And he's like, dude, you're starting to make us look bad. Like, this is my own farm, and you've dropped these deer like your first sit, like in two of these hunts. And they were both deer that, you know, they had never seen before. That's cool. It's just that magic time of the year in November where anything, you know, they're starting to move and anything can happen. And it's one of those things is the experience side of it. You know, we took it back and it was like, well, it looks like we're call the boys again. Yep. It's like we're hanging out in the shop again tonight. So
that sets that expectation for you though, too. You're like, man, I wish I could do this every year.
I know. You know? I really like focus my hunting. Like the, you know, if we have cameras and stuff out and I'm getting deers, I'm good deer on there. I'm pretty big on like, I want to get it done the first week before they really change up their pattern or anything. Yeah. Like that first weekend, it's like if hunt hard, that's probably the best chance. And you know, until they start changing and hit going nocturnal, and then you might not see them till November or whatever. But like for a few years there, it was like I was doing pretty good with tagging out in the first week or two. And if not, then it's like just like that's I think game. Everybody that's vacation game. Time is for November. You know, you take the first 2 weeks off and try to get it done then. But last year was, I think in the last 8 years, the longest it's taken me to have a successful deer, like a good hunt on the ground.
So you were like December or something, weren't you? Or you were late.
It was late November. Yeah. And I was at the point where I was about to just pack it up because I just love bow hunting so much. I think I might have shot two or three deer with a gun in my life. And I've never shot a buck with a gun. Every deer on my wall has been a bow kill, which is awesome. I'm pretty proud of that. So, you know, even during gun season, I'm sitting with a bow most of the time. Yeah. You know, throw the orange hat on and do it, let people push them around to me. But last year was stressful because it was our first year of school. We're competing in the fall. It's just hard to find time.
Yeah.
You know, in between practices, not getting out till almost 7 during the week. And on the weekends, it's kind of like you just want to chill because, you know, I guess the other side of that is, you know, most people are like, oh, you're a collegiate archery coach and, you know, you do this and that with prime and other things. And I'm like, they're like, that's so awesome. You get to shoot your bow all the time. You're so lucky. No, I actually shoot less now.
Yeah.
You know, and it's, I'm so in it. Like, that's the part where, yeah, it's my job now, but now it's my job. It's not a hobby anymore.
No.
This is what I do.
Yep.
So.
We don't know anybody like that, do we? So everyone at this table.
But yeah, last year was just a struggle. You know, I didn't get to hunt at all. And this is, it's a good hunting story. If we have time, I'll tell it real fast.
Yeah,
all time in the world.
Yep.
So like, you know, we're getting ready for outdoor nationals. So we're taking the team down to Foley, Alabama to shoot the Collegiate 3D National Championship.
Yep.
And I've been in the woods one time, I think, and this is like mid-October. I want to say like 14th, 15th or something. I don't know. And we were leaving. That bus was picking everyone up from school that night. We were leaving at midnight because it was like a 12, 13-hour drive or something. We wanted to get in there on that day and have time to get relaxed and everything. And they could warm up, practice Friday, shoot Saturday, or compete Friday, Saturday, or whatever. So we were basically doing like the all-night bus drive. And I was at school that day just prepping, getting stuff done. And one of the guys on our team has a pretty nice farm just a little further east of the school out in Guernsey County. And he's like, hey, coach, you want to go hunting with me and my buddy this evening? You know, because we've been talking about, I'm good friends with his dad. I've known this kid for quite a while, actually. He's a real good shooter. And I was like, yeah, I've been meaning to get out to their farm and check it out. And he's like, well, we're going. I'm like, all right, you know, like, yeah, I don't have anything else to do. I've been at work all day. I'm like, yeah, I'll go with you, you know. So I had like, and you know, it's like freaking almost 90 degrees outside.
Yeah.
It's hotter than hell. So I've got like super light camo. I don't even know if I've washed this camo yet since the season before. It's just been in like an airlock bag, you know, out in the garage and in a, you know, and, so I throw that stuff in there and I know my hunting bow, you know, I've shot it. It was tuned and dialed in and stuff, but you know, I didn't have a lot of time behind it cause I've been shooting the target bow nonstop all summer. And, so we got out there and we drive out there and of course it's like, we are not even early. We get to his farm and it's like we should have been in the stand an hour and a half ago, 2 hours ago, 90 degrees. And we get up there, getting dressed in the field and stuff. Well, I pull my stuff out, not only is my stuff probably not clean, the wind is terrible. I'm sweating like a pig. And I go to get my boots. They're both left boots. I didn't even grab, like, I was in such a rush and so unorganized. Like, it was one of those things where usually, like, you know, not like me. Usually everything is organized. Yeah. Everything is prepped, you know, and it's like my pack has all my stuff in it. This was kind of like, I was just like, okay, let's go throw some stuff in and I'm ready to go, you know. And so I pull it out. I've got a leather boot, left foot, and I've got this hybrid boot. It's a lefty. And we have to walk a good ways too. And I'm like, this is ridiculous. We're laughing about it. And I'm like, I'm not even, it's whatever, you know? So I'm like, I'm not even going to see anything anyways. It's hotter than hell. And yeah. Like, we're going to get an hour of sitting time. And so my game plan was, let's take the climber and sit somewhere. I love hunting out of a climber. So I throw a climber on the back. We walk, my feet are killing me. And you know, we get to this field, they go one way, and I'm going to this other side of the farm and thinking, you know, I'm just going to go in blind and find a good tree to climb. Wrong. This place is like a jungle. There is no trees for a climber, you know, and it's so late in the day, I knew I was like, I'm not trying to go into these woods and start kicking stuff up. I'm just going to sit on the edge of this hayfield. And they had a few stands on, you know, he had told me they're out there if you find one, you can sit in it or whatever. So I end up finding this old ladder stand, you know, and like, no offense to them. It was a good stand, you know, but it was, I don't know. It's one of those ones where you're sitting in like, okay, I'm glad I have my harness on.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like these ratchet straps, you know, it's like, but, you know, and it wasn't super tall. I'm probably sitting like, I don't know. It felt like 12, 15 feet off the ground or something. And the way the hay field rolled, it was like, I was basically eye level with deer if they came out. So,
yeah.
You know, I knew I wasn't going to find a tree, so I just kicked my climber off. It's just sitting on the ground by the base of the tree, and I just climb up there, and I'm sitting there, and I'm just kind of like, well, it's a good, you know, it's good to be in a tree finally, you know, like,
yeah.
Not going to see any deer, but, like, it's, I'm here, you know, it's, you know, yeah. I'm not at school in my office or anything, and nothing else to do, and so I'm just sitting there, look up, and about 150 yards out, the biggest coyote I've ever seen. Is just in the field prancing around in the grass and stuff. And I'm like, so great. I got left boots on. It's hotter than hell. The wind's terrible. I got the biggest coyote I've ever seen out here running around now. You know, I've only got 45 minutes of light to hunt probably. You know, it's like, great. And I even took a picture of my two left boots. It's still on my phone. It's hilarious.
That's awesome.
And so I'm texting like the guys. I'm like, dude, I'm taking video of this coyote and stuff. I'm like, this is crazy. This is a big one. And I'm just like waiting for it to get dark so I get the hell out of there. Like, I'm just ready to go.
Yeah.
And sure enough, like, I mean, that coyote left the field, and about 15 minutes later, I look over to my right, and there's this old logging road that comes up to the hayfield, and all I saw was this giant white rack. And he's just coming to the field. And this ladder stand, there's like three shooting lanes maybe through it. Like, yeah. It's just all overgrown.
Not maintained.
No. And, but I remember ranging that path and it was like 50 yards. And I was like, okay, well, at least I know that's at 50 yards, whatever, you know. And sure enough, that buck came out and he came right to the edge of the field. He's standing right there and he's just an awesome 8-pointer, super wide. And I'm looking at it and I'm like, all right, I want to take a shot at this guy. And I'm very comfortable and confident with shooting at 50 yards.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
I practice at that, you know. So, like, I know some people are like, oh, you can't believe you shot something over 30 yards. It's like, you know.
It's different when you're at your level.
Yeah,
you know. You practice all the time.
So, yeah. you know, if I didn't feel confident, I would not take that shot, obviously. Sure. But so I'm sitting there. Well, to get that angle, I had to stand up in this ladder stand. And I am shaking like a leaf. And this thing is wiggling with me, the stand, just as I'm wiggling.
I can feel it.
I'm standing there, and I get the full draw on this deer, and that wind is bad. And I knew I had to take that shot at 50 because I knew as soon as he stepped in the field, he was not going to go any further. He was going to go back in.
Yeah.
And he's looking around. He's looking over at me. He's looking, you know, he's alert. And so I was like, yeah, it has to be at 50. So I get back full draw, and – you know, perfect broadside shot. It was amazing. And as I go to release, you know, shot breaks. And I mean, the second my shot broke, he turns And at 50 yards, as fast as, you know, that bow was shooting like 305 or something. But at 50 yards, the deer turns in mid-flight. It was like in slow motion. I saw it. And I mean, I was like, I think I said to myself, like, I just missed that deer before the arrow even like got there.
Yeah.
And he turned and I heard like a hollow thump. And I saw him hop off down the logging road and go. But nothing was breaking. Nothing was crashing. And but I was pretty sure that I saw like a gut shot, you know. And so now I'm like, well, if it's either, you know, in his back quarter, it's in his gut, I don't know, whatever. So I'm texting them. I'm like, dude, I just shot a giant. You know, the guys, you know, first time to this farm ever, you know, like all this, what, you know, nothing's going right, you know. And they're like, no kidding. I'm like, but it was a bad shot. And I'm thinking, oh God, I'm leaving at midnight.
You know,
and I'm like, and I know the best thing to do right now is just to leave. I'm not even going to go over there and look for my arrow. I'm going to wait like a little longer, let it get dark, you know, do the things that I can control, to, you know, to ensure that, you know, to better my odds of finding it. Cause you know, I've had a few far back shots, on some animals and, you know, if you do the right things, you usually are going to find that deer, that animal. And, you know, so I waited a little longer. I backed out, went a real long way out, and we left. And got a hold, you know, and I'm feeling sick. You know, that's the worst feeling in the world.
Yeah,
you know,
it is.
You know, that uncertainty. And then, you know, just, you know, it really is, it's the crap side of the deal. You know what I mean? And it's part of hunting. It's part of bow hunting. It's a hard pill to swallow sometimes. A lot of emotions are involved, not just, you know, how you're feeling, but, you know, you take into consideration the animal.
Yeah.
You know, because I don't think there's an animal I respect more than the white-tailed deer. And, you know, a far back shot is, you know, it's a fatal shot, but it's not a quick way.
Nope.
And, you know, so, you know, your mind's thinking about all those and the what ifs and whatever. So I got my buddy to come out. And do some tracking the next day for me. Real good tracker. Found my arrow, broke off, blood, probably about 13 inches penetration, broadheads missing, found some blood. It was pretty dark, but the tracks, you know, the deer wasn't running. And, I mean, this deer was going like west, like way off the farm.
Yeah.
And it was just spotty. It wasn't, you know, anything bad. And I mean, he looked for like a day and eventually blood was non-existent. And, you know, I'm thinking it was maybe a muscle shot hit in the back somewhere in the quarter or something, you know, because then you start questioning, what did I really see?
Yeah.
You know, was that a gut shot? You know, what did I eat? You don't know. Your mind's playing tricks on you.
It is.
So, you know, yeah, felt sick. Didn't sleep for a couple of days in Alabama. We're going to national championship. I'm sitting on a bus the whole time, you know. It was the worst feeling in the world.
13 hours of stew over
here. Yeah, it was terrible. And, you know, went down there. It was a great experience at the national tournament. Our team did great. Really proud of them. And then we came back and the entire team, we all got COVID.
Yeah. Oh, I remember you.
I mean, everybody that went had COVID.
I remember that too.
We were supposed to shoot.
That was when we were supposed to do the video after you came back.
Yeah.
It was terrible. And so now I'm down, like couldn't even go and look for this animal. Even if I wanted to, we were going to grid search and do everything. And we got, you know, some other people involved, so it's like, let's keep waiting. Well, you know, we'll see if he pops up on camera. We'll see, you know, no sign of this deer the rest of the season. So we're thinking he just, you know, jump the farm or something. Or if he did, it's like, well, I don't know. We're gonna wait till the spring. We'll grid search and we'll look for stuff. And so it went on. Deer season was rough. I ended up shooting a nice deer though in late November over in Muskingum County. And then it rolls into the spring, first ASA shoot of the year. I was down south in southern Ohio. And I get a call from a text from Colin's dad. And he's like, hey, I, you know, he was out checking property lines and stuff. And he sent a picture. He goes, is this your deer? I was like, hell yes, that is that deer. And he was like, well, I just found it. He found it so far. Like, this deer did like, I mean, a giant loop. He walked through probably three different properties before he even came back, and he died on the opposite end of this property.
Oh, really?
And when I, you know, because we had like the GPS and the blood trail, and we had it all mapped and stuff, and it's like this deer was on his feet for a very, very long time. And having coyotes in the area, he's probably getting bumped all night and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know. But the amazing thing about it was he fell down into this cut. And, I mean, that was in April.
Yeah.
Not a single mark on his racker skull was chewed on by squirrels or anything.
Oh,
it
wow.
wasn't destroyed. It smelled absolutely terrible.
I'm sure.
It was real bad.
Yep.
Only about 3 months of rot.
Oh, it was bad. I mean, you figure, yeah. I mean, that was it. That thing laid there the end of October, November, December, January, February. I mean, that was like 6 months.
Half a year.
Yep.
And it was not damaged at all.
It's crazy. Nothing got to it.
No.
Yeah.
And so I got it. I got the game warden involved. They gave me, you know, we told them the story, and they gave me slip for it so I could keep it and at least do right by the deer. And I had a nice European mount made for it. And no joke, I should have brought it in, but the inside spread on this deer was 22 inches.
That's crazy.
And I mean, both beams just came straight out. They didn't even come back in. It was wild.
That's
yeah.
cool.
It was crazy. So, yeah, I got it clean. It's nice. And like I said, I'm trying to get an article written up on the whole experience because I think there's a lot of takeaways from that. You know,
yeah.
It's one of those things I think a lot of people can relate to. And like me especially, it's most of the times when I've had a successful hunt, it was when I was not expecting it to be a successful hunt. You know, and the ones where you prep and you prepare and you walk through all different scenarios and you go out there and you think you have like everything under control.
Dude.
It's when I didn't see a single deer.
Yep. 100%.
And the one time you go in there, like I said, and yeah. everything goes right.
Yeah.
It's but you know, it's kind of what do you do in that situation when things don't go the way you want them to? How, you know, there's the mental side of it. How do you cope with that?
Yeah.
And so, I mean, there's a lot of positive takeaways from it. That's why I kind of want to get a good write up going. And,
oh, for sure.
But yeah, I mean, the fact I've been calling that deer Lefty like since we found it because of my left shoes.
Oh, that's a great name for it.
So I'm gonna frame my feet in that freaking ladder stand and I'm gonna put it right in a frame right next to him.
That'd be cool. But you're 100% right on that though. Like the hunts that you are having such a hard time. You know, both of my experiences were. I mean, one with my first archery kill. You know, I forgot my harness. I had to walk back through and get my harness. And then you come back and you're like, man, it's hot. 45 minutes, boom, done. I'm done. And then, you know, we talk about there's a brand of sticks that we had some troubles with last year. You know, I'm fussing with the sticks at 9:30, 10 o'clock, you know, or, you know, whenever I'm in the stand. And I'm like, well, this spot's blown out. I'm going to go ahead and try this other spot that I've never been to on this farm. Well, then I had two encounters that day that just weren't close enough to seal a deal. And it's just like, but you go out there completely prepared, stealthy, quiet. You're like half asleep by the time you leave because it's like nothing. There's just nothing happened that day. It's just so funny how that works out that way.
I know. I think so. My friends think I just get, well, I don't think they, I think I do get lucky a lot of the times.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like I've been, you know, fortunate enough, you know, to have a good amount of successful hunts, but, you know, it's just like, I don't want to say it's not all luck because, you know, when you look at, you know, even if you're going into a place blind, you know, but you're still looking at maps and, you know, Onyx and Google Earth and stuff like that, you can find pinch points. You know, where, you know, walking in, where a deer going to, where are they going to eat? Where's some water? You know, where's the ridges? Where's the ridge? Stuff like that. So that does play into it. But yeah, I think as far as just, people are gonna, you know, I think at this point it's like, oh, a brand new property, don't let Craig go there. like nobody knows anything about it, don't let him step on it because he's probably gonna find a deer.
He's gonna kill the biggest deer on the property.
I'm probably like ruining my, like I'm not gonna have that luck anymore talking about it.
Yeah, no, it's all gone now.
It's all gone.
Remind me not to invite him to any control hunt or anything crazy that we got going on.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Well, let's dive in here, man. I know we want to spend some time on the collegiate side. I'm glad, like I said, you kind of transitioned it a little bit for us with the Foley shoot and all that. But like I mentioned earlier, Ben and I went and we did that little shoot off, if you will. I kind of let them beat me just a little bit. If Zach's not listening to this, so I can say whatever. But no, we had a great time with the team, and like I said, my wife obviously went to Muskingum too, so I got a connection with the university slash college when you guys went. Mm-hmm. But let's dive into the collegiate side, and then we'll kind of wrap it up with, if someone's listening, let's say like a parent or someone is listening, or even a student to this episode, kind of like how they get involved in that collegiate level. So go ahead and talk about the team first and kind of what you got going on there.
Yeah, so the team and program, I guess, just to try and give a brief overview of everything, you know, collegiate archery is really taking off in the United States. You know, in the past, there's been a lot of universities and colleges that had clubs, and now that you're seeing more of the like varsity teams, like funded programs through the university. And you know, I guess, you know, 3D archery is really taking off. You know, obviously indoor and outdoor target are, I think, the biggies for collegiate archery, but 3D is really I think last year at 3D Nationals there was, I want to say over 40, maybe 45 schools. It was the most that they had ever had as far as attendance goes. And that number, I could be off on that number, but I think it's somewhere there. You know, it's really taken off. There's other sports. I think it's like, they consider like an emerging sport or something, you know, because a lot of universities are getting like esports now, and you have stunt and some other stuff. But so collegiate archery, you know, you focus in the fall. There's three seasons. So you have your 3D season in the fall, you have your indoor season, your outdoor target in the spring. And the 3D really, it mirrors the rules and stuff off of ASA.
Yeah.
So you're shooting McKenzie's, you're scoring 12s, and it's all known. As far as the disciplines, there's bare bow, Olympic recurve. You can shoot pins class, so like your hunter setup, and hunter then setup. Open compound. Men's and women's divisions for all of them. You know, the main focus in those seasons is usually, obviously, you have regional championship and your national championship.
Yeah.
Here in Ohio, you know, I think right now in Muskingum, we are, I'm not sure. We are the only fully funded archery program in the state that offers scholarships.
Yeah.
There's other schools here in the state that do have programs, like Hocking College. Yeah. Ohio State has a club.
Yeah.
I think Case, Shawnee used to have, you know, there's a handful, Toledo and so on. I don't know. But, you know, so we really don't have like a conference.
Yeah.
You know, there are some really good conferences though throughout the country, like down Kentucky, like, you know, you have the Mid-South Conference, and there's schools like Cumberland and Union Pike and stuff, which, you know, I think the goal is one day, you know, I'm working with the USA you know, outreach director and education director, and you know, a lot of people, the events team there, to grow the northern region for collegiate archery, where, you know, trying to get more schools involved.
Yeah.
So, you know, maybe one day we do have like an Ohio Archery Conference or something, and have that, you know, that conference feel.
Yep. Do you think it'd be a lot of schools like similar to like your size on the D2 level, like your Wittenbergs and your Heidelberg?
Yeah.
And
I mean, you know, we've been doing work trying to get, cause, you know,
Otterbein and all those guys.
Yeah. It's USA Archery, which, you know, there's a lot of opportunities out there for schools and programs, you know, grant opportunities that, you know, and it's just kind of trying to get the schools, you know, aware of what's available to them.
Yeah.
Because, you know, last year, you know, you can get transportation grants, lodging grants, coaching grants, equipment grants, you know, there's a lot of things that you can do, that they can help get those started. So, you know, but, you know, the thing with collegiate archery is when you're going to regionals or nationals, you're competing against everybody.
Yeah.
You know, we don't fall under the NCAA umbrella where, you know, Division 1, 2, and 3 in your conference. It's like when you go to nationals, you're shooting against Texas A&M, Hocking Community College, you're shooting against
Ohio State.
It doesn't matter. Yeah. You're shooting against everybody. Sweet. And so it's kind of the same thing for the, you know, when athletes get acknowledged, you know, for their achievements, you know, when you have your All-American, they're an All-American.
Yeah.
When they're an academic All-American, they're an academic All-American. So,
yeah.
You know, it's pretty cool. And so, we compete in those three areas, 3D indoor and outdoor, and, you know, we're pretty fortunate at Muskingum because, you know, the university itself, you know, it's a great place, great people, but they're really supportive of the program and, you know, building, you know, the direction we're going with it and what our goals are for the future. So having that support has been extremely helpful.
Sure.
You know, and it's helping kind of set us apart. You know, we're going into our second season competitively. And, you know, we have an amazing outdoor range. We have a great 3D course. You know, we have it's like close to 260 some acre farm that was donated to the school. And it's, you know, cross country and archery
only. Yeah, it's awesome.
And, you know, our indoor range, you know, we're finishing the new wellness center at the university. It was like a $37 million indoor turf track, you name it. So it frees up the John Glenn gym for archery. So now we have our indoor archery center is centralized on campus for in the winter.
Yep.
And
that's where we were, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, you know, and then for outdoor, we're back out at the farm again. So there's not a lot of programs that offer that, you know, that have those type of facilities.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I tell everybody that, you know, when I came in the first like half a year or whatever, my main goal was like, you know, you're building this from the ground up, which is, you know, that was a huge thing for me because it was like, you know, I graduated from Muskingum and I, you know, been gone a while, but it was like when this opportunity kind of came up, it was like, this is a great, great chance for me to give back and to get involved in something that I'm passionate about. And something that, you know, it's like, you know, I don't want to say people, your job, you know, you want to make sure you love what you do, you know? And it's like, you know, that's, and the people who do, you know, their everyday job, they love what they do for a living, you know, that's rare, you know?
Oh, yeah.
I think I had a lot to offer to the student athletes as far as my life experiences. Yep. And, you know, just kind of the overall development, not just of athletes, but as, you know, people preparing them for the future.
Yeah.
And, so, you know, all those things were kind of just like, yes, green light, like, let's do this. It's going to be a challenge. And it's been hard for me in the first year because, you know, I came in, it was like, let's build these facilities. You know, let's recruit. I mean, we got, I mean, there wasn't anything I didn't, I had to do everything. And, and I was I'm learning now, through this process is like, you can't get it all done at once.
Sure.
And you can't do it all on your own, you know, to alleviate some of that stress. Because I'm kind of like, I want my range finished. I want the team ready. I need this, you know, I need Under Armour to get more involved. I need this stuff.
Yeah.
You know, the scholarship, like it was just a lot of moving pieces and I wanted it all done quickly. Like I had a goal for we still have a goal. Whereas like I have to be realistic in the sense where it's like, this is phase one, phase two, phase three, and so on. And we're right on track with where we're supposed to be, which is good, but it has been a learning experience.
Oh, because, yeah, man.
You know, the whole coaching side of that for me, you know, it started out, I just liked it. So I got certified as a coach to work at shops, like to help at shops and local clubs and stuff like that with, you know, youth shooters and stuff. And, it just so happened I had enough certifications that I was eligible to even apply for this job, you know, when it came up. And, you know, since then now, you know, it's like my coaching, you know, my certificates and the courses and the workshops I've gone to and, you know, everything, it's really taken off, in a short amount of time.
Yeah.
But, it's been fun so far, a little hectic, but, I tell our recruits and I tell our students and even the staff there, you'll hear on campus a lot, like it's an exciting time to be a Muskie, you know? Yeah. And it's like, but for, I think our program, it has a little bit more of a more meaning to it because
that's something
you
new.
Know, people we're bringing into this program, it is exciting because they're building this.
Yeah.
From the ground up, that you're the foundation of this program going forward. You get to say, like, oh, yeah, that archery range, we built that. We helped coach with that.
Yeah.
Or I was part of the first team that went to regionals and won, you know, I was part of the men that took silver medals at regionals, the first one, you know, or
exactly.
I was on the first academic All-American there, you exactly. know, so, you know,
my name's the first one on the banner, right?
Yeah. And they're all like, you know, and some of them, they're already so far. They're like, it's going to be sad when I leave here because it's like, this is how good it is now. And it's going to be in like 5 years or 10 years, you're going to have one of the top programs in the country probably.
Yep. Yeah.
You know, and I'm going to come back and be so jealous of all the, you know, the awesome facilities, how improved they are and everything. Right, exactly. And it's like, but you know, once you're a Muskie, you're always a Muskie, you know, so, and not just for what we're doing at the university, but you know, we're really getting involved with the community.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. In the region, you know, we're getting involved with the ASA. We've been doing a lot of stuff with NASP, after school programs and, you know, not in, you know, us, but, you know, people, you know, even Prime, they really, like I mentioned earlier, they've helped out with a lot of stuff. And some of the other sponsors we have going, like Black Eagle and, you know, the Easton Foundation is great too, because they really helped us out with a lot of the grants, free equipment grants and stuff with USA Archery. So,
well, it's cool too, because that area, I mean, it's kind of two part. That area is kind of a pipeline, you know.
Yeah,
if you think
it's
of like
archery rich environment.
Yeah, I mean, look, you go take a walk through Philo High School halls and look at all the state championship trophies that they have in there, or Maysville, or you know, West Muskingum. Mm-hmm. I mean, all that entire area, the MVL area. I think at one time Sheridan was the only, which is the closest MVL school here to us, where we are, was the only school at one point that didn't have a NASP program in the entire MVL.
Yeah,
I mean, that's like 10 or 15 or probably like 9 or 10 schools. And so, yeah. And it's right in your backyard.
Yeah. And not just MVO. I think there's like the AAC or something. So you get some of the Southern schools and schools in West Virginia.
Oh, for sure.
But yeah, I mean, those NASP programs but S3DA is also really taking off, here in Ohio, just like ASA. It's kind of, everything's coming north, you know what I mean?
And
I was just at the outdoor S3DA Target National over the weekend, and it was a great event, good turnout for them, and getting to watch the young adults shoot and stuff, and it gives me a good chance to talk with their parents get our program out there a little bit. But a lot of good shooters. I mean, these youth shooters these days, they're just, I mean, they're so far ahead of, you know, where
the tech, I mean, even what they're shooting. Yeah. And I'll tell you what, man, like we did that video. And like I said, my wife graduated just a couple of years after you, and Muskingum kind of was my college experience, you know, going there and visiting on the weekends or whatever have you. And just to go and to see the campus and see how things have changed and what's different. And I can only imagine how you feel as a graduate and being able to like build something that, you know, obviously you spent your life at, and then you can share those experiences with those students. You know, you've walked the hill both ways, you know, and for people that went to Muskingum, they know exactly what I'm talking about. I think they got a bridge now, but
yeah, they're so spoiled now. Like I tell a lot of recruits, and it kind of like shows my age when I talk to people at school now. Cause I'm like, back when I went to school here,
For sure, man.
But it's like, dude, the dorms didn't have air conditioning.
Oh my God.
I'm like, you know, we didn't, you know, my senior year, that chess center was finished, the new student union student center, you know, and, but now we've got a brand new music center, brand new library, the nice theater, you got an AC in the dorms, they got a nice, there's only one cafe on the one hill now, you got the bridge, you don't have to walk up and down hills and stuff. And, you know, you got this amazing indoor facility. There's like three turf fields now, you know, you're not playing on grass anymore, cow pastures, you know, it's like, I'm like, well, I always tell them, I'm like, well, so this is where all of our tuition went, so you guys are welcome.
Yeah, no doubt, man.
you get all the nice stuff.
Exactly.
I'm not saying it wasn't nice when I went there. I'm just saying it's definitely improved since.
So if I'm and this is something I thought was really interesting to me with the scholarship money and not being part of the NCAA, kind of how you can get kids that may not necessarily want. This is another opportunity. I think you told me golf and archery were the two least utilized scholarships. I think archery obviously probably being the least utilized. Golf is a little bit more prevalent. But like kind of how if I'm like a if I'm a junior at Philo High School, or you know, you picked up a lot of kids from Crooksville area, like if I'm a student, like how does this help me get into college?
Yeah, I mean, with the recruiting and how all that stuff works, I mean, collegiate archery, it is taking off, but you know, I mean, a year ago, yeah, we were primarily recruiting from Ohio, a little bit of West Virginia. And now, you know, we got Front Rush, we have recruiting apps and stuff we use. I mean, I have recruits from as far as, you know, Utah, Connecticut, Florida. Cool. Like, cool. I mean, there's almost every, like, it's wild. And a lot of that, you know, comes from getting involved with S3DA, and the ASA. You know, we send scholarship awards to like podium finishers at a lot of the national events for the young adult classes. But locally, yeah, if, you know, people are if students are looking to want to continue their education, they want to continue to excel in archery.
Yeah.
It's really just, you know, a matter of reaching out, you know.
Yeah. Is there a certain number of slots? Like, do you have a certain like
not team really.
Size or however?
No, not, I mean, that's the thing. Like, we'll cross that bridge when we get there.
Yeah.
It's not a bad conversation because growing is never a bad thing.
Sure.
But then it comes down to like, all right, let's get some assistant coaches in here or something, yeah. You know, or how do I, because, you know, with that number, it's kind of like, how do you schedule your training plans the lessons where you're having they're beneficial practices.
Yeah, you
know,
I mean, you got like 30 kids because, there. It's hard for you.
Yeah, make sure they're getting the right time and the attention that they need.
Yeah.
But right now, like this year, we are at, I believe, 27.
Yeah.
Doesn't necessarily mean that we will be 27 for every season because we have a lot of athletes that are dual sport athletes. Yeah. You know, we have some that play volleyball, some are on cross country, some are on golf team and stuff. So they're dedicated to those programs when they're with them.
Yep.
And then, you know, so they might not shoot 3D. They might only do indoor and outdoor target or vice versa, whatever.
Sure. It just depends on how their seasons fall or their priorities.
And it also, you know, it comes down to a lot like what are their goals and expectations? What do they want to get out of the program?
Yeah.
You know, they're there to get an education. That's number one.
Yep.
Archery's like the icing on the cake. You know, you get to do that as well. So, you know, when we sit down with each student athlete, you know, and have touch bases throughout the year, but it's kind of like your priority level with certain things and where maybe you need more attention at that time. You know, and, you know, internships and you know their course load and all that stuff kind of place.
There's
so it's
a lot
kind of like you know, the thing with the archery is, you know, I set this program up to be like accessible just about everybody. Being, you know, where it's like, you know, if you need to study more and you can't be at practice Wednesday, that's fine. Well, my office is always open and we can always schedule time to work on, you know, your shot or whatever it may be. We'll find a way for you to get time in, you know, like, so in the same thing, like with I tell a lot of these kids, cause you know, some of them it's don't get discouraged. Like if you're an ASP shooter and you've only shot an ASP, you know, and you want to try this and you want to, you know, but I've never shot a compound bow or an Olympic recurve bow. Well, that's why I'm a coach.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Exactly.
So it's the experience level. You know, obviously everybody wants to recruit elite athletes.
Sure.
You know, but I mean, you know, coming in as a developmental athlete is something, you know what I mean?
Yeah, like, exactly.
It's not bad. And it doesn't mean that, you know, I'm going to not give a scholarship to you because you're only skilled in NASP archery.
Well, sure.
You know, there's a lot more that goes into it. What do you do for your community? What kind of, what are your grades? What's your involvement? You know, like,
well, you want good students.
Yeah.
Right?
We look, I think not just my team, but Muskingum in general is,
yes,
you know, we recruit good people. You know, people who not just like good people, but you know, that I think some of us coaches, we often talk about like that championship mentality, and it's not always like, championship is in your national championships and stuff, but it's like, do you have that mentality in all aspects of your life, with your job, with your family? Like, do you want to compete? You know, are you challenging yourself daily? Those are the athletes that we want. Yeah. People who want to improve, not just academically, but with their life, with sports, you know, that want to be better, you know, better today than they were yesterday.
Sure.
And, you know, just good people. That's what we, and Muskingum was just full of good people, you know, and, you know, once you're there, a faculty and every, you know, you've been on campus, you get that sense right away.
Oh, dude, we, how long were we there? Maybe a couple hours that night.
Yeah, like 3 hours.
And like instantly we had, I can't remember the girl's name that we shot with. It's on the video. We had a great time with her.
Yeah.
You know, and then, you know, some of the other girls, you know, it's just funny, like, watching them interact, and it was really family friendly. Like, a lot of guys were talking about hunting and stuff. Of course, mm-hmm. We had Zach there, and we were, you know, cutting it up with him, being a previous employee here. And so it was just, I mean, like, within 30 minutes, we were having a great time. I mean, it was like not a big deal.
And me going there, I get to talk to people about the school all the time, you know, my experience. But for being where the school is, if you love hunting and you love fishing and you like being outside,
There's no deer in Muskingum County.
Yeah, don't go there.
That's what
nobody.
Dan and Jackie.
Stay out of there.
Dan and Jackie. Dan kept saying, but there's no deer in Muskingum County.
Yeah, there's no deer.
My wife's family lives out in the New Concord area. And man, her uncle is just, he's always slaying. Mm-hmm. And there's definitely. Dale Jr.'s got a place not too far for a reason, right?
Mm-hmm. When we were in school there, it was like, go to practice. When it's over, run to the truck and get to, you know, go hunting. Or, you know, school's over, get going. And, you know, there's a lot of opportunity out there.
Especially even on the fishing side. I mean, I don't want to segue this completely too much, but even on the fishing side, with them adding Jesse Owen State Park and all the wildlife area that they've added.
All the AEP land out there.
AEP land, you know, that's another 30 to 40 some thousand acres that the state added. Mm-hmm. We've said it before, but, you know, there's people catching monster 8, 9, 10 pounders down there, and it's literally like you know, 30 minutes from the college. I mean, and you're in it. So I don't even know how long we've been going on here, man.
We can go like an hour and 10 minutes.
Let's I want to give you the opportunity to go ahead and pitch, like, so if I'm someone that's interested in, you know, checking out more information for the college, and then, you know, where can people find you on social media? If I'm interested to see, you know, even your stuff personally, go ahead and give us all your social media stuff and how people can reach out to you.
Yeah. So, as far for the school, I mean, we are on it. We have social media outlets. We got Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. Also, if you go to fightingmuskies.com, you can go to get recruited. There's a link for archery. You can submit all your information there. My contact information is on there to, get a hold of me by email or phone or whatever. And same thing. If not, I'm on social media, Instagram, Twitter. I'm also at, you know, a lot of the national shoots, a lot of the local regional stuff. So that's always a good way. You know, not everybody can depend on schedules and stuff. You know, my office is always open, but I meet and speak with a lot of parents and kids and just shooters in general at a lot of the events. Even if we're not recruiting there, you know, I'm there shooting or competing, which is great. It's kind of two birds with one stone. I get to go and shoot at these events and I get to meet great people and stuff at the same time. So that'd be good. But, you know, if you are thinking about wanting to, you know, continue your education and you want to continue to pursue archery, Muskingum is a great place for it. And, you know, to be part of something, you know, actually built, you know, you're building this. Yeah. So, it's that time right now, if you want to get involved and be part of a family and, you know, let's set something up. You can come out and we'll get, even if you're out of state, we can do virtual tours and stuff. But the important thing is just figuring out, you know, is Muskingum the right place for you? Do we have what you need academically? Is it going to be a good fit for you? More times than not, you're gonna, you come to Muskingum, you're gonna be successful.
Get a great education there.
Yeah, you get a good education and a lot of support.
Definitely. All right, man. And we'll have all those links and everything, like always, in our show notes below. Yep. So you can just go ahead and click on those. And if you're watching YouTube, we'll have it all in the descriptions and all that stuff.
Yeah, I think I'll be at the next shoots, the ASA Classic down in Alabama here in, I think, 2 weeks or so. So if anyone's down there, you can see me running around the ranges or whatever, give me a shout.
We need to get him on the tack tour next year with us.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can go do some tack. And his summer has been busy going back and forth to New York. But yeah, we're gonna have to get behind the bow with each other here before too long, because I'm sure that would be a heck of a good time. So
yep, you guys are always welcome out at the range. Like I said, we'll start practices up here August 16th, and you know, we'll have 3D ranges up and practice ranges. You guys come out, get dialed in.
God knows I need it.
We're also going to host another shoot.
Are we? Okay, cool.
I forgot to tell you about USA Archery, where they asked if we wanted to do the first USA Archery State 3D tournament. Nice. So we are going to host that in September. Right now, I believe 17, 18. I'll have to double check on that. But it'll be the first USA Archery 3D State Championship in Ohio history. So we're going to do that at Muskingum, which will be awesome.
We'll be there.
Yeah.
I'm sure we will, because we had a hell of a time at the state qualifier. You had a worse day than I did.
Well, the first day was a little rainy, but we got through it.
Yeah. Rain, snow, sleet. It was terrible.
But really windy. But no, that would be awesome, man. Yeah. I'm glad you mentioned that, because we'll have to check that out for sure.
It's all known yardage, so people won't have to judge.
There you go. Awesome. All right, brother. I appreciate you coming in.
Yep. Thanks, man.
Take care, everyone. Have a great day. All right, everyone, that is all we have for you today. We hope you enjoyed that conversation with Craig. It was great to bring him into the studio and talk all things Muskingum Archery, as well as what he has going on. As always, we appreciate you listening. Please give us a rating and share this episode with a friend. And until next time, enjoy the pursuit.